Hey y'all, it's Kelly Clarkson here to talk Wayfair. No matter your space, style, or budget, shop Wayfair.com to make your home way more you.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Hey, it's Jenny Garth here. The talk around GLP-1s is inescapable these days, but are you familiar with Future Health? They've made accessing qualified doctors who specialize in GLP-1s easier than ever before. My friend has struggled with their weight for many years. It was always up and down. She tried fad diets, never saw lasting results. So she started using GLP-1s, and not only did the weight come off, but she also gained more energy to do all those activities that she loved the most. I'm all about feeling my best and living my life in a healthy way. It's incredible how science is able to help us achieve that healthy lifestyle that we are all striving for. Future Health gives millions of people affordable access to knowledgeable providers who really know weight loss medications for less than $3 a day. Find out if weight loss meds are right for you in 3 minutes at tryfh.com. That's tryfh.com.
Tryfh.com.
Future Health is not a healthcare service provider. Meds are prescribed at provider's discretion. Results may vary. Sponsored by Future Health.
Hey guys, it's Allie. Welcome back to Infertile AF, the podcast. This is episode 302 called Megan Day. This episode is supported by Embryo Solution. If you're navigating infertility, and I'm so sorry if you are, have you ever thought about embryo donation as a family building solution? Embryo donation is when one family that has gone through IVF donates their embryos to support the family building efforts of another family. And Embryo Solution is an agency with an important mission to fill the gap between infertility and excess embryos by connecting all parties involved. Embryo donation costs approximately 30% less than traditional IVF. Embryo Solution is an inclusive agency working with single parents, couples in committed relationships, LGBTQ+ families, and more. With Embryo Solution, you are able to choose between an anonymous and an open relationship with the donor family. Plus, Embryo Solution ships the embryos to the clinic of your choice. So whether you're looking to build your family, or you've gone through IVF and you have embryos in storage that you're not sure what to do with, Embryo Solution can help. To find out more, go to embryosolution.com. Again, that's embryosolution.com. Thanks, Embryo Solution. This podcast is sponsored by Receptiva DX. Receptiva DX is a powerful test that has helped thousands of women who've experienced recurrent pregnancy loss or IVF failure. The test helps detect inflammatory conditions of the uterus that might be preventing you from becoming pregnant or staying pregnant. The most common underlying condition of a positive Receptiva DX test is endometriosis, with or without symptoms. If you or someone you know has struggled with IVF, Receptiva DX may give you the answer and treatment protocols you're looking for. Talk with your doctor about Receptiva DX because the journey is worth it. Don't let uncertainty overshadow your fertility journey. Explore the possibilities and talk to your medical team about Receptiva DX today. The best part? Infertile AF listeners get a special discount, so make sure to ask for the test and use code INFERTILEAF24 for $75 off. Again, that's code INFERTILEAF24 for $75 off the Receptiva DX test. Thanks, Receptiva DX. All right, guys, before we get started, I just want to let you know that my book, Work of Art, my children's book about IVF, is on a special sale for Black Friday. It is $20 for personalized copies, normally $32. So go to infertileafgroup.com if you want to check that out, and you can say what note you want me to write inside the book. If it's for you or somebody else, I'm so happy to do that always. And I will write a little note in there and ship it out. So it's a great holiday gift. It's just a great thing to have in general. Check it out at infertileafgroup.com. Also, Fertility Rally is having a Black Friday special as well. Our annual membership right now is just $189 as opposed to $249. So check that out at fertilityrally.com. There's a code in our Instagram, so you can go there and check out the code and you get the $60 off. We would love to have you, especially around the holidays. I know it's really hard. So check us out. DM me if you have any questions at Infertile AF Stories or at Fertility Rally on IG. And we hope you can come join the Worst Club with the best members, because everybody is welcome. We're here for all of it. All right. So Megan Day, who I had not met before we had this conversation that you're about to hear, she reached out to me via email. You can always go to my site, infertileafgroup.com, and my email is on there if you want to reach out. She really wanted to share her story. And I'm so glad that she did want to share her story, because they are about to welcome any day now
their brand new healthy little baby via gestational carrier. So thank you so much to Megan for sharing everything that led up to that moment. They're going to talk about the pivot that led to their surrogacy journey, how they found their gestational carrier, and what happened after that. So without further ado, this is Megan's infertility story. Hi, Megan. How are you?
Good. Hi, Allie. Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much for doing this. I am very glad you reached out. I always love to share all kinds of stories, as you know, and I know that you said in your email to me that you'd been listening to the podcast, which I really appreciate, and I want to hear what you have to say. So let's start at the beginning, which is, have you always wanted to be a mom?
Forever. I mean, I think I've wanted to be a mom since I was like 2 years old. I was the kid who like refused to play with Barbie dolls. I only ever wanted like baby dolls, and they had to have all of this, you know, real clothes and real bottles and fake milk. And I just, I've always wanted to be a mom.
So fast forwarding a whole bunch, what happened when you, you know, met your husband, and were you guys on the same page about family building and what you wanted your family to look like?
We were. And the interesting thing about how we met is my husband, Phil, and I met when he moved here from Tennessee. I think he was here like 3 or 4 days. And I could tell things were like a little bit off. He's from the South. He needed to get used to like the Midwestern culture. And so
where are you?
I'm in Minnesota.
Okay.
Yep. And so I broke up with him twice. And he, being the persistent guy that he is, he kept reaching out. And the third go around was right when COVID hit, and I had nothing else going on. I was like online dating, and we do like these terrible virtual dates. And then I got this text message from Phil being like, "Hey, I just want to see how you're doing. Do you want to go for a walk?" And there was nothing else to do. So I was like, "Oh, sure. Let's just go for a walk."
Yeah.
For a walk, Allie. And I shit you not, I got done with that walk and I'm like, I'm going to marry this guy.
Really? What happened on the walk?
I don't know. It was like he came to Minnesota. He had been here by that time for close to a year. I think he got used to like his life here. And I just knew, and that was March of 2020. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And we dated a couple of months and things were going super, super well. And he sat me down at our favorite restaurant that we would go to every Friday night. And I could tell he was like a little bit fidgety. And he's like, "So I want to ask you a question." And he's like, "Do you want to have kids?" And at this time we were both, I think, 33, 34. And so I knew like a little bit about fertility, and I was thinking, okay, I need to be aware of like my age. And I was like, absolutely. I want to be a mom. Like, but I only want to do it with someone who wants to be a dad. Like, I don't want to do it alone. And that like pushed us to getting engaged really, really soon after that Thanksgiving of that year. And we had like a year and a half engagement. So like a pretty long engagement, but in terms of dating, we pushed up our engagement really fast because we wanted to get married and we wanted to start a family. And we knew that I was almost geriatric at that time.
I hate that term. Don't you?
And I wish I could go back to being 34, because now I'm like, I was so young. I had so much fun.
Totally. Yeah. It's such a misnomer, and I wish it would just like go away. Hey, that word is just so, it's so insulting. And, you know, it made me so self-conscious when I was going through it too. So did you guys start to try right away?
Immediately. We got married in January, 2022. So like, yeah, like 14 months after we got engaged, and we were lucky. I mean, I think back to it and I feel so silly. Like, it was our third month trying, we got pregnant, and it was easy. I mean, we tried, especially that third month, but like thinking back to being able to get pregnant that fast was like unbelievable.
And I know that didn't turn out exactly how you wanted it to, right?
It didn't. And I was 34 when I got pregnant. Because of my age, they did like all the genetic testing. They do all of the, you know, to see if everything looked okay, and everything was perfect. I mean, the genetic testing came back perfect. I think it's called like a NIPS test. I decided not to tell anyone. And so to refill until we were in my second trimester that we were pregnant. And Allie, we hit that 13 week mark and we told everyone. I mean, I had everyone over to our house. We were so excited and we told everyone. We started to decorate the nursery. We picked out a name. We bought all this nursery furniture. And then we went in for my 19 week checkup and it was just supposed to be like just a test really on me just to see how I was feeling. And I still remember that day laying on that like terrible bed with like the paper, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. You
know, I can remember what I was wearing and it was awful. And the nurse tried to like find the heartbeat and she couldn't find it. And she was like, oh, I'm sure it's fine. She's like, you know, sometimes babies move around a little bit. She brought in another nurse. They kept waving that wand around my belly. And my husband was there just being like, it's okay. It's okay.
And what was going through your mind?
I was like this. I just saw my son 2 weeks ago on the ultrasound. Like we had just seen him moving, you know, we had heard his heartbeat so many times and this was just like a nurse appointment and the nurses couldn't find his heartbeat. And so they grabbed an OB who wasn't even my OB. Cause she wasn't working that day. And this random OB came in and she brought in this like weird machine to try to like, I don't know, go deeper and try to find that heartbeat. And
were you guys panicking?
Oh God. Yeah. I mean, I just was shaking. I remember everything about that little tiny room with my husband and two nurses and an OB and this weird archaic machine trying to find a heartbeat. They couldn't find one. And the OB just said, I'm really concerned, Megan. I think we need to send you down for an ultrasound. And we were in, you know, it wasn't even the hospital, it's like this off station nursing facility and their ultrasound was booked for the day. And so they were like, we need to have you drive to a hospital on the other side of the cities. I live in Minneapolis. So like, you know, 20 minutes away to find an ultrasound to look, to see what was going on. And we did that. And, you know, they put us in the ultrasound room and it's dark and they turned the screen away from us. And the ultrasound tech doesn't say anything. And my husband was like, what's going on? And she goes, do you want to see? And my husband said, absolutely not. And they just confirmed that our son had died when I was 19 weeks pregnant. And they sent me home.
I'm so sorry, Megan. I just got the full body chills. It has a physical reaction, you know, hearing that for me. I can't imagine how you feel reliving that. You've said it. You know, obviously that was the worst day of your life. I'm so sorry. Did they?
I can like feel it when I talk about it.
Me too. I mean, I'm like getting all flushed and like, it's like the trauma from, you know, my trauma, your trauma, like it's palpable.
It doesn't go away. Like you carry it forever.
I'm so sorry. That just must have been horrendous. And that there's no words. I mean, horrendous is not even an apt description.
Yeah, there's no word.
How do you leave that room? Like what happened next? Were you and your husband just a puddle? Like I feel like I would have just been like, this isn't real life.
Totally. I mean, you feel like I almost felt like I was watching myself, like watch this, like in this moment.
Totally.
And it was a Friday and it was right at the time when like COVID was revamping. So like there are all these different protocols and the hospitals were busy and all this stuff. And so the tech just said, just go home. You'll get a phone call from your doctor about next steps. And I'm thinking, how do you react to that? Knowing that like your son is inside of you and he's not alive and you need to go home and just, you don't even know what's next. And our OB called us that night. And she's like, okay, we need to schedule you for a surgery next week. So that was a Friday. So in my mind, I'm like, so Monday, I'm supposed to sit with this until Monday. And she's like, and she told us, well, no, actually we have to wait until Wednesday because of the hospital scheduling. And I just remember thinking like, how do I get through 5 days like in this situation? And she said she would try to push me up and there just was no way to get me in before Wednesday. And we were just supposed to go home and report back to the hospital on Wednesday. And that was all they could do. They didn't have answers for us. We asked what happened, like, why didn't I, you know, I didn't miscarry. It was called a missed miscarriage. My body just didn't miscarry naturally. And we go home Saturday and Sunday. I feel like we're just total blurs. I know we had family over to our house. I don't even know what happened for those 2 days. And that Monday, they made me report back to the clinic to do like a COVID test, or there was all these protocols that I had to go through. And I walked into our living room and I gushed blood.
Oh,
like I walked out of the bathroom and I was like, oh my God. And so that was, I guess, I'm assuming the stress of everything, my body finally decided to actively miscarry, but I was 19 weeks pregnant. So I couldn't, it was a medical emergency for me to like, if I would just continue miscarrying.
Right.
And they didn't have room for me to have a surgery.
So did you go to the ER or what happened?
Yep. Yeah. I went to the ER. And I don't know if you've been to the ER, but it's just chaotic. And there's, you know, people in the waiting room, and again, COVID. So there, you know, it's just absolute chaos. And I was panicking. I didn't know how to deal with what was going on. I remember the nicest person was the receptionist desk woman, brought me out to like a bathroom and she gave me a pad and I was bleeding everywhere. And she's like, I'm just so sorry. Like, and she held my hand, and that was the only person during that emergency room stay that really was compassionate. They brought me back to some medical room to examine me. And I remember the first thing was laying on that bed again with my like legs and knees up in the air. And a doctor like looks down inside of me and she goes, oh, I've seen worse. I still remember that moment because I was thinking you're meeting someone who is losing a child and that's your response. And
no,
part of the reason I wanted to talk to you, Allie, is because I feel like these things happen and it's so unfortunate for women to go through all of this and feel so alone. And then to have people make comments like that was just,
especially other women, right?
Other women, I know.
And someone who works in the medical field, like where's the empathy? Where's the compassion? Like maybe in a twist, not sympathetic or like empathizing with her, but maybe she was trying to make it you feel better in some way by being like, it's not that. I don't know either. I don't get it. It's fucked up.
It was
bad. So sorry that you had to hear that.
Thank you. And if I never have to go to emergency room again, like I hope that's my life, because it was just the whole experience was awful from her comment. And then, you know, we had all these people coming in with consent forms to what we wanted to do with our son after the surgery. And then I was signing off on these forms for the surgery that I was having while answering these questions. My husband is there trying to like, you know, navigate it. I mean, there's not a rule book. There's no one tells you about these things to think about. Right.
You never think you're going to have to sign a form that's like, what do you want to do with your child that's passed away? Like that's the worst.
Yeah. And my husband kind of took control over that part of it because he's trying to be my rock in that situation. And I know even to this day, he really struggles with some of the decisions, which were not the wrong decisions at all, but you know, he didn't know what we should have done. And now we're years past it. And sometimes he thinks we should have done something else. And it's hard.
Do you mind talking about that? Or is that too?
No. So we chose to have our son cremated, and there's like a communal burial plot at one of the local cemeteries for miscarried babies. And so we chose that option, or my husband did, which I still, in that moment, was the right choice. He was trying to protect me and he was trying to do right by our son. He struggles a lot now because he feels like we should have done something individual for our son. And I told him, looking back at that trauma and what happened after that, I don't know if I emotionally could have done anything more than that. Like that was the right choice, because of everything else that was going on in that moment. So
absolutely. I think there's probably panic, there's trauma brain, there's, you know, all the emotions. How do you even think straight? And how do you think, you know, and you do make the best decision you can at the time. And, you know, it makes me sad that he has regrets about it, because it does seem like it was the best decision for you guys then, you know? So yeah, that's hard. That's really hard. But I hope he doesn't beat himself up about that. You know, that's, you guys are obviously, there's so much love between you two and your son, and, you know, you did what you could, you did what you had to do. No one thinks they're ever going to be in that situation.
No, that's for sure. And it's tough. So I know he made the right choice, and I hope he can come to peace with that at some point too.
Right.
But he, also in that moment, I remember he pulled the ER doctor aside and he begged her, like truthfully begged her. He's like, we want to have a family. We want to grow our family. We want to have children. Please, please, please take care of my wife. Do not hurt her. We need to have children. And that was the last thing I heard until they rushed me off into surgery. And then I woke up and then it was weird. It was done. Like this moment, this massive piece of our life was over. My pregnancy was done. Our son wasn't with us and we were sent home. And we were told we would get a call from our OB again. And they wanted to do a bunch of tests on me and they wanted to do a bunch of tests on the fetus because it was so weird that you'd have a 19-week missed miscarriage without any sort of like issues leading up to it. And so for the next 4 weeks of our life, we just had tons of blood tests. My husband had a couple too, and they found nothing wrong. They couldn't give us any answer to what happened. Our last doctor at the end of September of that year, so about a month after the miscarriage, they sent us to a high-risk doctor to go to talk about our future. Like, what were we going to do next? And he told us, once you get your period, you can start trying again. You're healthy. Nothing's wrong. We didn't find anything wrong. This was happenstance was the word that he used, which seems a little bit insensitive. But I remember at the time reading about like after you have a miscarriage, you should have a period pretty soon after. And it had been over a month and I hadn't had a period. And so I did the thing no one should do and everyone should do. And that's go down every single rabbit hole that you possibly can find on the internet. And
right.
I kept reading about a condition called Asherman's, which is scarring. And it often happens after a DNC, which was the surgery that I had with my miscarriage. And I hadn't got my period. And I asked the perinatologist, the doctor, I said, I haven't got my period yet. Should I be worried about Asherman's? And he said verbatim, absolutely not. You had a late term missed miscarriage. It could take 6 months for your period to return to normal. And so I was like, this is the best of the best. This is a specialist in this field. I should trust what he says. And so I did. And we went home and I continued to not get my period, which I like wanted so bad because we wanted to get pregnant. I felt like the way to like move past the grief and the trauma was to like be pregnant again. I like wanted it desperately. And in I think October of that year, I started to spot. And so I was like, oh, hallelujah. I'm like getting my period. Like this is going to be over. We're going to try to get pregnant and like life is going to move on. And hopefully we can find happiness again instead of live. Like our whole life was this miscarriage. Like everything was the miscarriage, our testing, what's the next step. And I kept spotting and then I would have like a real period or what it seemed to be a real period. And it just kept spotting. It was very weird. And I kick myself now looking back at this time, because with all of the testing, the blood work that they did on me and on the fetus, even talking to the perinatologist, no one did a physical exam of me after the miscarriage. So no one actually like looked at my body. No one saw like what the results of the surgery were. And Thanksgiving of that year, I was still spotting and I had like this mini panic attack. And I was like, something's not right. We called my OB and she's like, well, we should probably do a vaginal ultrasound and just see what's going on. And at that point, I'd never, ever had a vaginal ultrasound. I had no idea this even existed.
Wow.
Yeah. So I didn't even know this, like this little wand was a thing you could do. So I go in and a couple hours after the ultrasound, I get this message saying that I have RPOC, which is retained products of conception. And this, mind you, this is like over 3 months after I had my DNC and I flipped the fuck out, Allie. I was like, what are you talking about? Like,
right. I would have too.
I'm like, what is this? And I start reading about it and I learn that this is like, you know, it's literally your conception materials, which, you know, in my mind, I'm like, are you telling me that there are pieces of my son inside of me for 3 months? And like, yeah, it was terrible.
Hard. I'm sorry, Megan.
It's just like, it surprises me that no one did like a physical exam on me. Cause I look back now and if they would have done that after my DNC, it would have shown up immediately. And instead I waited all this time and it started to like harden in my uterus. And so they're like, okay, well, we have to bring you in for another surgery. So a couple of days later, I go into the same day surgery center and the surgeon comes in. She goes, "Now I'm going to do another, a D&E this time. We're going to use a camera to make sure that we get everything." And she goes, "But no big deal." She's like, "I have three more of these scheduled right after you. This is so easy. You'll be out of here before you know it." And I'm like, "Okay." And I'm like, "Well, can we try to get pregnant after this is done?" And she's like, "Yeah." She's like, "Just wait for a period and then you can try to get pregnant. No big deal."
Okay.
So I go into the surgery and I wake up and I knew something was wrong immediately. The surgeon was flustered. There were all these nurses all around. And I said, "What's going on? What's going on?" And she looks at me and she goes, I couldn't get everything out." And I said, "I'm like, what the fuck do you mean you couldn't get everything out?" And right. she goes, "I couldn't get all of the material out. It was too stuck to your uterus."
Oh my God.
And I said, "Okay, well, put me back under. Let's finish the job. Let's do this right now." And she goes, "I don't know if we can do that. I need to talk to one of my colleagues." And I said, "Wait, so you're just going to leave it in there? Like, am I going to be able to have children?" And she goes, "I don't know." And she walked out the door and I never saw her again.
Whoa.
It's Kelly Clarkson here to talk all things Wayfair, the best place to buy furniture, decor, and anything else you can think of to create a home you absolutely love. Some of y'all might have heard I made the cross-country move from LA to New York last year, and Wayfair has definitely helped me create the feeling of home wherever I am. I love a cozy couch and a comfy living room that feels like our little sanctuary for our family. And I love vases, I love candles, I love anything that kind of makes you feel at home and peaceful. Anyway, something about me is I love options when it comes to making my home more me. I know when I shop with Wayfair, I find options for every style, whether I'm feeling boho or farmhouse, modern, traditional, French country. I can find exactly what I need for my home and more. Everyone loves a good deal. I mean, who does not want free and fast and easy delivery? Come on. No matter your space, style, or budget, shop Wayfair.com to make your home way more you.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Hey, it's Jenny Garth here. The talk around GLP-1s is inescapable these days, but are you familiar with Future Health? They've made accessing qualified doctors who specialize in GLP-1s easier than ever before. My friend has struggled with their weight for many years. It was always up and down. She tried fad diets, never saw lasting results. So she started using GLP-1s, and not only did the weight come off, but she also gained more energy to do all those activities that she loved the most. I'm all about feeling my best and living my life in a healthy way. It's incredible how science is able to help us achieve that healthy lifestyle that we are all striving for. Future Health gives millions of people affordable access to knowledgeable providers who really know weight loss medications for less than $3 a day. Find out if weight loss meds are right for you in 3 minutes at tryfh.com. That's tryfh.com.
Tryfh.com.
Future Health is not a healthcare service provider. Meds are prescribed at provider's discretion. Results may vary. Sponsored by Future Health.
Yeah. And I'm sitting there.
So it was still the products of conception slash maybe some scar tissue, and things had started to kind of meld together, for lack of a better term.
That's my understanding of it.
Yeah.
So I'm not the most dramatic person, but in the most dramatic fashion, I like ripped the IVs out of my arms. I threw my pants on and I told my husband that we needed to get out of there.
Like, oh my God.
It was so upsetting. We didn't know what was happening. Of course, we get another phone call from the OB and she goes, "We just don't know what's going on. Like, we don't understand why we can't get all of this." She's like, "We want to wait a month and see if your body can maybe heal a little bit. And then we want to bring in this like surgeon who's done really unique cases. We want to have like, we want you to be at an actual like hospital, not a same day surgery center. We want to go in there and see if we can get a good idea of what's going on and try to remove this material. Because with the material in your uterus, you can never get pregnant." And to me at that time, I was like, "I need to be pregnant. I need to have
a
baby." Like
yesterday.
Yeah. And so right before Christmas of that year, I go back in and that surgery, and it's again, in like a D&E with a camera. And the doctor was like, "It went amazing. Your surgery was perfect. We got everything out. We're going to put you on some." Yeah, it was like the best day ever. It was like such a happy Christmas, which is funny to think, because I was supposed to be like 9 months pregnant at Christmas time. And instead I was just happy to like have my uterus.
To have another chance, right?
To have a chance. Yeah. So we celebrated that chance. I was put on hormones to like rebuild my lining. And the same message was, you take these hormones, you're going to get a period, you can start trying not to get a period. And I'd say a month and a half, 2 months went by and I didn't get a period. So now I'm going down the Asherman's road again. And I'm thinking, I'm not getting a period. What's going on? What the hell? So I go into my OB and she goes, I don't understand why you're not getting your period. Everything looked perfect during your last surgery. And I said, well, what could it be? And I think I was 36 at this time. And she's like, well, maybe you're going into perimenopause. Maybe you have a form of cancer, or maybe you're just like so stressed out that like your body isn't regulating itself. So all of these things that are like super scary. So they send me in for a bunch more blood work and they can't find anything. So they're like, well, we need to do, it's like a saline, it's some sort of a saline sonogram.
Yeah.
Yeah. I can never say that. And so they send me back in and they try to dilate my cervix and it's so painful, Allie. I'm sitting there and like 15 minutes, I'm bawling. I'm in so much pain. And my husband is there and he finally stops them. They're like, we can't do this. Like, you're causing her too much pain.
Oh.
And they tell me we need to go back in for another surgery to see what's going on. So mind you, that would be my fourth surgery now that I go in for.
Okay.
And they go in and they find scar tissue all over my uterus, which is the reason I wasn't getting a period. And they scrape it out and they put a balloon inside of my uterus and they give me hormones. I think the balloon was in me for like 2 weeks. And the idea is to try to prevent your uterus from re-scarring shut.
Mm-hmm.
And the hormones are trying to rebuild up your endometrium, your lining.
Mm-hmm.
They take the balloon out, the hormones continue. They say you're going to get a period, or I should get a period, and they don't. And my surgeon, so the one who performed the fourth surgery, said the same thing. Well, let's just bring you in for another surgery.
Number five,
yes. And my husband and our third surgeon both chimed in at this point and said, wait a second, like we keep going in to Megan. And like, this has now only been, I think I had four surgeries in like 3 months.
Mm-hmm.
Something's not right. We need to send her to like a specialist. So they send me to Mayo Clinic.
Mm-hmm.
In Rochester, which thankfully being in Minnesota,
mm-hmm.
relatively convenient. And they send me to this world-class surgeon who has seen Asherman's, who like understands this. And he goes, okay, we're going to do an MRI on you to see what's going on from that perspective. He sees all this scar tissue and he sits us down and he's like, listen, you've had four surgeries. Your body is for whatever reason keeps building this scar tissue. You're not getting a period. He's like, I can go in. He's like, I'm the best in the world. And it's funny because like it sounds so cocky, but I appreciated him telling me, like, I really am. I'm the best of the best.
Mm-hmm.
I can see what I can do, but you probably need to think about other options if you want to have children.
In terms of carrying. What do you mind saying who the doctor was?
His name is Dr. Khan.
Okay.
K-H-A-N. And he, and all of the doctors and all of the surgeons and all of the nurses that I had seen since August, he was the only person that I felt like gave us like some really honest answers and not some of this like false hope, which was mm-hmm. the really difficult part about the past months, because we kept thinking like, oh, a surgery, well, then we can get pregnant. Oh, like we just kept constantly having this hope that was like dashed. And finally we had a surgeon say, listen, like, we get it. Like, we know you want to carry your own children, but that might not be a possibility. And like, that's going to really freaking suck, but like, you might need to think about different options.
Right. Sometimes it's nice to just have some direction, even if it's not the direction you wanted or you thought it was going to be.
Absolutely. And so he's like, let me do one more surgery. Let's see what I see. Let's see what I can do. So we did. We had one more surgery at Mayo. And they took a bunch of pictures, which is kind of in a weird way, cool to see what's going on inside of you.
Mm-hmm.
And I woke up and he showed me the scar tissue that they removed. And he used the great word that I still remember to this day. And he's like, well, your uterus is basically concrete.
Oh God.
He's like, which is very insensitive, but at least it was better than saying, like these other doctors prior were saying like, oh, we see a little bit of endometrium there, like all this fake hope. And Dr. Khan was here saying there's scar tissue. And once we remove the scar tissue, now your uterus is either not going to scar But it's concrete and you're probably still not going to be able to carry, or it's going to re-scar shut. So
wow.
He did another balloon and hormone treatments and my period never came back. And at that point, Phil and I were just done. We had, you know, I had done 5 surgeries. My uterus wasn't fixing itself. And I was 36 or almost 37 at this time. Mm-hmm. And I just, you know, I knew that I didn't have a ton of time left fertility wise. Maybe mm-hmm. I had longer. I mean, who knows how long I actually had. Mm-hmm. So Dr. Khan told us the best thing we could do is bank some embryos, do IVF, and try to find a gestational carrier if we wanted to have biological children, which for us is important. I don't even really know why, but it was important to us that we had our own children.
And you don't need to even explain why. It's between you and your husband. You know, everybody has their own opinions about how they want their family to be. Let me ask you this, Megan. How was it with you and Phil, like, throughout all this? This is, you've been through so much.
You know, it's so funny. I've heard people say, like, oh, you go through these trauma experiences and they make you stronger. And I totally disagree with that. I think they just
same.
Yeah. I'm like, they don't, they just,
we were terrible under pressure, under stress. We do not do well under stress, my husband and I, but yes, I've heard that from other people too, that, oh, we bonded together and great. I'm happy for the people that that happens to, but that wasn't what happened for me. So tell me about you guys.
We were always in different levels of grief with our son, especially, you know, we were still trying to grapple with our baby. And we would, you know, sometimes he would be like laughing on the phone with his brothers and I would get so angry, Allie. I would get so angry. I would be like, nothing is funny in the world right now. Like literally nothing is funny, nothing's funny. And I'd be so upset. And then, you know, me going through all of the surgeries, he was so supportive, but you know, I always had a little bit of that like resentment that like, it's totally on my body. You know, I have to go through all of these things. But he's this goofy guy that was able to like keep me afloat. I mean, I really don't know like what would happen if he wasn't here. I mean, it was awful for us. It was so stressful, but I wouldn't be able to do it by myself. So,
right.
I mean, it didn't make us stronger, but it showed us like how strong we are. And we still think like, if we can get through that, like there's nothing that we can't get through because there is
totally.
I don't know, but I don't think there's anything worse than losing a child and then all of the after effects of that.
Yeah, I agree. So I know you guys embarked on your IVF journey and I'm reading your blog. You got 5 genetically normal embryos. And then how was the finding the gestational carrier process for you? And do you call it GC or surrogate or interchangeable? I'm just curious. There's no wrong answer.
No. And it's funny. I used to be more into like what it's called. And we say GC or gestational carrier. And early on, I would hate when people would say surrogate because I was like, well, surrogate doesn't necessarily mean you're genetically related to your child. And now I realize that just doesn't matter. But we say GC. And we decided to go independent and try to find our own GC because we'd interviewed 3 agencies and they were telling us that it could be 2 years for us just to like match with someone.
Crazy.
And at that time, we'd almost hit that year mark, not quite, but almost the year mark of our miscarriage. And I was like, the idea of waiting 2 more years to find someone.
Absolutely.
And then just going through the process, like going through all of the legal clearance and the medical clearance, the psychological clearance, there's so much. And we were looking at 3 to maybe even 4 years before we'd have a baby. So I just decided I would find someone on my own. And we told every single person we would meet about our story. And we had my parents tell people they knew, just hoping that someone would know someone that like maybe was interested or felt like this is a calling. And I always joke that I would go to Starbucks and I would, you know, order my latte. And then I'd be like, hey, by the way, any chance you are interested in like carrying someone's baby? And
oh my God, did you do that?
Yes. Because I mean, more so
amazing.
Well, because I can't describe the desperation that I felt. Like I just felt desperate. Like I totally. Felt so out of my mind. Like I needed to find this person. I needed to find someone to carry our child because it wasn't going to be me. So I was like, even if I have these embryos, like they can't go in me, you know? So
right. Did you turn to social media at all?
I didn't. And I didn't realize until now how much of a social network there really is for people who are looking for a carrier, and carriers as well, who are looking for intended parents, who people who really feel like this is their calling. So I think down the road, that might be something we would do.
Okay. So you found somebody, right?
Yep. Actually, my dad found someone. My dad's a construction worker, and he was talking to a client of his, and he was like, well, Megan and Phil are still trying to find someone to carry a baby for them. And this woman said, wait a second, my friend was going to do this for her sister, and her sister isn't feeling comfortable with this process, but she still feels like this is something she wants to do for a couple. And that's how we found Kimmy, is her name. And we had a phone, like a FaceTime with her. This would have been last summer now, so summer of 2023. And we hit it off, and she was still, her sister was still on the fence. And it felt terrible because we were like, oh, please don't use Kimmy. Please don't use her. But like, please don't use her so we can, you know, we can work with her, because she's just, I mean, she's the most amazing person. And
yeah.
We love her. We love her husband. We love her three children. I mean, there's no way it could have worked out better than it has with her.
So you guys did a transfer, and what happened next?
Yes. So we did a transfer in October of 2023, and that resulted in a miscarriage, which the most joyful day was when we had that transfer, and the reproductive endocrinologist was like, we have a perfect embryo, we have a perfect uterus, you have a 70% chance of live birth. And then to miscarry was like, you've got to be kidding me. Like, you've got to be kidding me.
Yeah. The devastation, once again, a totally different kind of devastation, right?
Yes. And now, you know, watching Kimmy go through a miscarriage, which she had never experienced before, everything about it was so emotionally fraught. I mean, it was just heartbreaking. But we were like, okay, our doctors told us, like, a lot of times if the first transfer doesn't work, the second transfer will work. And so we held on to that piece of hope, Allie. And we did a second transfer, and it didn't work. It didn't stick. Nothing. Like, zero HCG. Like, nothing. And I think you've had other guests who have mentioned one of the really difficult things about infertility, fertility in general, is that it doesn't happen in a vacuum. Everything in life is still ongoing. And so you have this massive thing that is like the center of your universe, the only thing you can think about. And there's all the rest of life that's ongoing too. And at the time when we lost after our second transfer failed, I got laid off. I fractured my femur.
Oh my God.
We had like I say this now because it's almost comical. Like, we had a bathroom like leak through our ceiling. Like, we have all of this.
You're like, mess. How much more can we fucking take?
Yes. And I had a complete mental breakdown. I remember I went to lunch with a cousin who I'm really close with, and she had some fertility struggles, and she sat down and she goes, I'm pregnant. And I broke down. I just broke down. And I, again, in a very dramatic fashion, I just left the restaurant. I said, I just can't be here.
Yeah.
And I on the floor bawling, like I couldn't handle life at that time, because it was like, what do you, you know, the little pieces of hope that we had been given over the year and a half with, you know, thinking these surgeries were going to work. And then we found a gestational carrier. And then it's like, we have all these really great embryos, and everything that was hopeful just got slashed. And then all these life things were happening, and I was like, I just can't deal with it. Like, it was
absolutely, it's too much.
It's too much. It's the lowest of the low. And it just was awful.
And there's so much heartbreak there and devastation. And like you said, life goes on. Like, you want to just crawl into a hole, and you can't, because you have to live, and you have to work, and you have to, you know, be in your marriage and be a friend and be a daughter and, you know, all these things. And then there's these reminders from all the other people in your life. So it's just, it's a very mentally hard place to be. I'm not surprised you had a breakdown. That is very valid and normal.
Thank you for saying that.
Absolutely. And what did you guys decide? You know, it's obviously you want to keep going, right? So IVF again?
Yeah. So we had three transfer that we were going to do with Kimmy, because at that point we didn't know if it was our embryos that were the issue, or if it was maybe a uterus issue with Kimmy that they didn't know. And so our doctor was like, well, there's no science behind this, but maybe you do another round of IVF and maybe we can get an embryo from this new batch and use that for your third transfer with Kimmy. Meanwhile, we'll put Kimmy on this depot shot that would like put her into menopause because they thought maybe she had silent endometriosis and that's why these transfers weren't working. And again, it's all a crapshoot. You know, you just don't know. So it's like, okay, we're going to do all of the things at this third transfer. We're going to use an embryo from a different IVF cycle. Kimmy is going to do this awful depot shot that was miserable for her, putting her into menopause. I think we threw, gosh, like 50 Chinese herbs at her. She did acupuncture. I mean, we threw the world at this transfer. And I have never, ever been so nervous in my life because that was it. If it didn't work, we were back to square one with trying to find someone else. And so we had a
transfer. Was it because in the contract that you had with her, it was three and then that was it?
She would have done more, but if we had lost three, I mean, then we were down. So my second round of IVF, we got 14 embryos and only two were genetically normal. So at that point, you know, we didn't have a ton of embryos to spare. IVF is extremely expensive. Surrogacy is very expensive. So it was like, we just knew that we couldn't keep throwing embryos, for lack of a better word, at Kimmy if it didn't work.
Right. Absolutely. So it's so nerve wracking. You're doing all the things, all the herbs, all the acupuncture. Tell me what happened next.
Got pregnant in March. Yeah. So like March 14th was the transfer and March 23rd was the day we got that official like positive pregnancy test.
Oh my God.
And it was really special. She had actually went to Florida with her family right after the transfer. So our fertility clinic didn't have an office in Florida. But they were like, well, you can go to like a different offsite center and do like a blood test. So instead of getting the phone call from the fertility clinic that we normally would get, Kimmy got to be the one to tell us that we were pregnant.
Oh my God. Tell me how that felt to get that call.
Oh, total shock. I mean, we just couldn't believe that it worked because up until that point, like nothing had worked.
Were you guarding your hearts and like bracing yourself for the bad news? You're like, we're always on the wrong side of the statistics, right? We always get the bad news.
Yeah. I didn't think it was going to work. My husband now says that he knew it was going to work. I don't know if that's true. I don't actually think that's true. I think that's not true. But yeah, we were just like, how do we enter that next day if we get a negative test? Like, how do we go back to like trying to find someone to carry our baby, knowing that we don't have a ton of embryos in the bank? Like, what do we do? Like, I'll be honest, I don't even know if we had an answer to that. I look back at that time and it wasn't that long ago, but it seems like an impossibility to deal with life if it would have been bad news.
Right.
But I still keep her pregnancy test in my drawer, which is so nasty, but it's in a plastic bag. And it's just kind of like this little reminder that like it actually worked. Like all this shit that we went through, like it worked. Like we're.
Can I tell you something? Pregnant. I still have mine from when I got pregnant with Sunny, my IVF baby. He's almost nine.
Okay, and so it's okay then.
It's still, and we were actually going through our stuff in the basement, and it was in a bin in a baggie, and I was like, "I'm not getting rid of this. Sorry."
Oh my gosh, that's okay. I feel better now.
Yeah,
thank you.
So you're not alone there.
Oh my gosh, thank you.
Yeah, of course. So okay, so this was in March.
Yep.
So the math on that is that we're not there yet, right?
We're not there. Yeah. Any day. I think we are 37 weeks and 4 days today.
Oh my God.
Which is wild, Allie. I mean, right before I got on this call with you, we had our OB appointment with Kimmy. And I mean, they're so joyful because we get to see our baby, but they are so
is she
stressful.
Local? So you get to go with her?
Oh yes. She's like 2 miles from us. That's the
awesome.
Thing.
Okay.
I mean, we go to every appointment. We see our baby every week now, but it's still like, it is so stressful every time they put that monitor on her belly and I'm waiting to hear like the heartbeat or like,
100%.
It's just, it sucks that we can't totally just like have this carefree, like, oh, baby is fine. Like, let's do whatever. Like, it's so stressful. Like it's so much happy stress, but it's stressful.
Mm-hmm. Do you know the gender? I can cut this if you don't want to say, but do you know what you're having? Yeah.
We're having a girl, which is so exciting. My husband is the youngest of four boys. I have a brother. There's only one grandchild and it's a little boy. So we have this little girl coming into this world of a lot of male energy, and we're so thrilled. We're so excited.
Oh my God. I'm so happy for you, Megan. And I can just tell Phil, he's going to be a really good girl dad. I can just tell.
Yeah. He is meant to be a girl dad for sure. Yeah.
I see this picture, the way he's holding your little doggy on your blog.
Oh my gosh. So Darla, just quick side note on Darla. I got her before I met Phil. And if I ever say that she's my dog, it is the biggest source of contention. I mean, she is now our dog and Phil's best friend. That's for sure.
Oh, so amazing. Please keep us posted, obviously. Thinking all the best. But before we wrap, Megan, tell me, you know, having gone through everything that you've gone through, which is a shit ton, what do you want to say to somebody who might be listening now that's like in the depths of despair and, you know, feeling really hopeless? What do you know now that you didn't know then?
Talk about it and share it as much as you feel comfortable. The hardest part, I think, with infertility journeys is they're so common, but so not talked about. And it's so cathartic to have people to talk about your journey with, but also a lot of people are going through shit. And when we lost our son, I felt like I was the only person in the world who knew what was going on. And there were so many people who had came out of the woodwork who were like, oh, we had a miscarriage, or we had, you know, went through a fertility journey or IVF, whatever it might be. And I just think about how much I wish I would have known these people existed before we lost our son. So I would have had like that safety net. But I also, some of the things I've told you about with, you know, my Ashermans and the surgeries, I didn't know how to advocate for myself because I didn't know what I didn't know. And I just think as women, if we could talk more about what we're going through, especially when it comes to our reproductive health, we can advocate for it so much better. The whole reason that I blog is I hope even if one person reads something, it might help them to be like, oh, wait a second, maybe I should ask a doctor to do a ultrasound on me because they never did after I had a miscarriage. I mean, I just hope some of these issues that are happening don't continue to.
Okay, thanks again for listening. Thank you so much to Megan for sharing her story. I can't wait to hear more about this new little babe that's about to arrive. If you are still in the thick of it, please check out Fertility Rally. We have several groups a week. We have IRL events and virtual events. You are so welcome. We would love to support you. We launched in 2020 and we've been doing this for so many years, and we love it because we've met the most incredible people, and we are hoping to support you as well. So check out our Black Friday special right now, $189 for our annual membership, which is $60 off. So go to fertilityrally.com, go to our Instagram at Fertility Rally, and you can hear all about that. Also, don't forget to check out Work of Art, which is also doing a Black Friday promotion, $20 personalized copies. So you can check that out on my website at infertileafgroup.com. As always, reach out if you need anything. I'm here for all of it. Sending so much love, especially around the holidays. Thanks again to Megan, and I will talk to you guys very soon.
It's Kelly Clarkson here to talk all things Wayfair, the best place to buy furniture, decor, and anything else you can think of to create a home you absolutely love. I know when I shop with Wayfair, I find options for every style, whether I'm feeling boho or farmhouse, modern, traditional, French country. I can find exactly what I need for my home and more. No matter your space, style, or budget, shop Wayfair.com to make your home way more you.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Can you believe all this talk about GLP-1s? Of course you can. It's all people talk about. Have you heard about Future Health, though? They make access to qualified doctors that know GLP-1s easier than ever. People can struggle with weight loss for years, trying various diets and exercises without lasting success. With GLP-1s, many people notice a reduction in cravings and felt more in control of their eating habits, which lead to weight loss, physical health, and feeling more optimistic about their future. Feeling good is most important. And no matter what you do to be healthy or to get in good shape, now science can be utilized. Everyone wins. They give millions of people affordable access to knowledgeable providers who really know weight loss medications for less than $3 a day. Find out if weight loss meds are right for you in 3 minutes at tryfh.com. That is tryfh.com.
Tryfh.com.
Future Health is not a healthcare services provider. Meds are prescribed at provider's discretion. Results may vary. Sponsored by Future Health.